Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federalist Society virtual event. My name is Marco J. Lloyd, and I'm an Assistant Director of Practice Groups with the Federalist Society. Today, we're excited to host a webinar, Will Maine Lose Federal Funding Over Civil Rights Enforcement, featuring Beth Parlato. Beth is Senior Legal Advisor of Independent Women's Law Center. Prior to this, Beth was a trial litigator in New York State for over 30 years. During her time in private practice, Beth handled an array of matters in the areas of civil, family, and business law, including representing not-for-profits, institutions, and churches. Beth also serves as judge in New York for 12 years and had the honor of being the first female elected judge in Genesee County. Our moderator for today's program is William Trackman. Will is a general counsel for Mountain States Legal Foundation. Previously, he was appointed to serve in the Department of Education as Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office for Civil Rights. He is also chair of the Colorado Federal Society, the vice chair of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights' Colorado Advisory Board, an adjunct professor at the University of Denver Sturm College of Law. If you'd like to learn more about today's speakers, their full bios can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. If you have a question at any point in today's program, please enter into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window, and we will do our best to answer as many as we can. Finally, I'll note that, as always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues, and all expressions of opinion are those of the speakers. With that, Will, thank you for joining us today. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Marco. It's great to be here. And I'm honored to have our guest, Beth Parlato, here from the Independent Women's Forum, and also a colleague on a number of important issues going around the country. We're excited to talk about the topic, Will Maine Lose Federal Funding Over Civil Rights Enforcement? As Marco said, there is a Q&A box at the bottom of your screen. We have a big crowd here today, which is terrific. We're excited to have so many people. But that means that if you have a question, you want to get it in early so that you make sure that we get a chance to answer it before the end of our time here. With that, Beth, I want to open the floor to you. Can you tell us about what the issue is, how we got here, and some of your work right now going on interacting with biological males and women's sports and the underlying controversy involved in the main issue?
Yes, thanks for having me, Will. I'm happy to be here. So the initial question here is, will Maine lose federal funding? And I can say unequivocally, if they continue to violate Title IX, they will. And that's coming directly from conversation with a colleague, former colleague that's in the White House. So how did we get here? Back in January, President Trump signed an executive order, and I could just basically cut through and just call it the, you know, sex definition order. So he basically defined male and female and defined sex in his executive order on January 20th, and specifically said that sex does not include gender identity. Then a few weeks later, the president issued a second related executive order, and that is to keep men out of women's sports. And with those two orders, the president is serious that we cannot no longer in our country erase women, because that's what was happening. Title IX was instituted to protect women, to give them the same opportunities that men have, going back from 1972. And, you know, women have been able to have so many opportunities over these last 50 years because of that. And then we did a backwards for 4 years with Biden's administration, where there was a change of the word sex to include gender identity. And when you do that, that allows and opens the door for men to invade women's spaces and women's sports. So that brings us to Maine. A few days after the executive order was signed by President Trump to keep men out of women's sports, the governor of Maine stated she's not going to abide by it. So she picked the fight with the president. And as all of us probably know, that's not a fight you want to do. So she picked it and she says, we are not going to comply. And so that's why the administration, started directly going towards Maine to make them comply.
Yeah, it's kind of out of a movie. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people on the line have seen this clip where President Trump is giving a speech at a luncheon with a number of people there, including the governor of Maine. And in his speech at the luncheon, he starts to talk about this issue of biological males in women's sports. And then he gets onto the topic of Maine and says, is the governor of Maine in the crowd here? And she raises her hand and says, and President Trump says, will you comply? And she says, we'll see you in court. So clearly it's out of kind of like a movie where you have this conflict set up from the beginning and this highly public confrontation between the president and the governor. So since that time, I think it was pretty quick, things started moving rapidly with respect to the administration taking action against Maine. What was the first shot across the bow there?
Right. So it did go very quickly. You know, she said they weren't going to comply and the president was going to ensure that Maine was going to comply. And so the first, I believe, was that, you know, the USDA, everybody heard about that. They were withholding funding. It kind of was, you know, and I hate to say it and use this term, but it really was kind of a tit for tat where, you know, the government was withholding this and then there was another order and then they complied and then they withheld more money. But what I want to say is there was a lot of focus on that initially and a lot of outcry with, you know, withholding money from children's school lunches and things like that. That issue has been resolved as of Friday. So on May 2nd, there was a court appearance. The United States, the government and then the state of Maine came to resolution. They signed an agreement and there is a court order. So all funding there's no longer any more withholding of funding. So that issue for the time being has now been taken care of. I did speak to somebody in the White House just yesterday on that. And they said that the White House is not focusing on that, you know, that they are focusing currently on the litigation that the DOJ has filed a lawsuit against the state of Maine and they're playing the long game. And that's where their focus is.
So it's interesting. There's a couple of different tracks that this can take because Maine's getting federal funding from multiple different sources. One, of course, is these school lunch programs under the jurisdiction of the Department of Agriculture. And we saw, I think, the Biden-Harris administration try to weaponize that the other direction, saying you will comply with our policy on transgender issues, or you will lose your federal funding when it comes to lunches. And I think you're alluding to this. It got a lot of criticism because, of course, the idea is you're holding hostage this, you know, the lunch of elementary school students. So it sounds like maybe in this context, the administration isn't going to pull funding, at least on that issue. I did see the governor of Maine crowing last Friday saying, I told you I would see you in court and now I've won. Yeah. Is this so? That's not the end of the story, though, right?
No. And they did do that. So if anybody wants to do a quick Google search, Maine has, you know, all of the media attention has said Maine won. And that was really an agreement between the government and the state of Maine, because that isn't the focus. On April 16th, the Department of Justice, Pam Bondi, they filed a lawsuit against Maine. So that's not where the focus is going to be, because they believe that's a winning lawsuit. And, you know, the bottom line is we have these two executive orders to keep males out of female sports, female athletics, not only for the lost opportunities, but also for safety reasons. I mean, all of us, this is an 80-20 issue. It's mind-boggling to me why the state of Maine wants to, you know, fall down on this sword to protect the athletes who want to self-identify as males and take away opportunities and roster spots and harm women. But that's what they're doing. So anyway, the government is going to focus on the lawsuit. This really is a winning lawsuit. It was commenced on April 16th. And right now, the state of Maine has not even responded to the papers yet. All that has been filed are notice of appearance.
So this is one track. There's also, I guess, the Department of Education. They have their own federal funding and their own administrative processes. But for now, it sounds like you're saying the focus is going to be on the Department of Justice's original action, and we're in federal district court in Maine. Is that right? Not D.C. Okay.
Right. So the complaint is in the District of Maine, United States District Court in Maine. and the United States versus the Maine Department of Education. And basically what this lawsuit does, it's a 30-page complaint. It's to force Maine to comply with the provisions of Title IX. The provisions of Title IX where basically have said since 1972 that sex is defined as male and female, and there shall be no discrimination on the basis of sex. Sex does not include gender identity. Gender identity was never obviously brought up in 1972. And so that's what these executive orders did on January 20th. The executive order on January 20th said we are going to back to the original intent, because under the Biden administration, they tried to change the original intent of Title IX and include gender identity as a definition for sex. So President Trump on January 20th said, we are going back to the original intent of Title IX, and sex means biological sex. You are either male or female. And the executive order specifically states it does not mean gender identity. So in order to provide athletic opportunities for the females in the state of Maine, they have to be compliant with Title IX the way it was originally written in 1972, or they will lose federal funding.
Yeah, so that's a great point. So Title IX doesn't actually mandate anything unless you receive federal funds, right? And then the punishment for violating Title IX is that you have your federal funds stripped from you. I think critics will say this is unfair, maybe retaliatory, to go after Maine. Maybe it relates to this luncheon that Governor Mills and President Trump tangled at, because it can't be that Maine is the only state with a policy right now that biological boys can compete in women's sports. I think we've seen stories out of Oregon and Washington State where similar things are happening. Mm-hmm. What is the response in your mind to the idea that they're unfairly targeting Maine or making an example of Maine based on this personal vendetta issue?
Right. So I would say that they are not unfairly targeting Maine. Maine was the first to publicly state that we are going to disobey and not comply with your order. So because of that, they were the first ones to be able to be investigated by the Department of Education and then also Health and Human Services. So the government conducted their investigations. They found that there was enough evidence that they are violating. And the reason for that, there are three specific instances. If you would take a look at the complaint that has been filed by the DOJ against Maine, they have student A, student B, student C. They list the sports, they list the dates, and they list the ranking that male would have received if he participated in that event under the boys division, where they would be number, 28 or 30, but they participated in the female division and they're number one and number two. So these are current, within the last few months, males participating in female sports, which, by the way, Maine has lied, because they asked that question. They've been asked that and they said they are in compliance. There are no males participating. So there have been three specific examples that are set forth in the complaint. So Maine is just the first state. And if they do not comply and the government does withhold federal funding, this will be the first time in the history of our country that a state has lost federal funding because they have failed to comply with federal law. But this is just the first one. We're not letting those other states go. Like you said, I think you mentioned Oregon, you mentioned Washington State, I believe Minnesota, California, Illinois. We've heard some examples there. And what we've been doing at Independent Women's Forum, people knowing that this is our issue, we have been working to protect women and to protect the erasure of women in all the states. So we're doing it on a federal level, and we've also been working at a state level. And what we have been doing now is when we hear of instances where there is documented a male participating in women's sports, we are able to track that, and we're getting it right over to our connections on the Hill and, in the White House. So it's not only going to be Maine. The other states can take a look at what's going to happen, but the other states will also be sued.
Now, we mentioned that we're in the federal district court in Maine. I don't know who the judge is, but the courts in Maine are going to have to review the merits of this question about whether Title IX prohibits someone who says, I'm a transgender female, I ought to be in the female division of sports. Is there any discovery? Is it just that issue, or is there other are there other issues in the litigation that are going to come up and Maine's going to do anything, something else?
No, that's really the only issue. So the Maine Department of Education, every school in Maine, K through 12 and universities, public and private, that receive federal funding will have to comply with Title IX. For their athletics, they have what's called a, and I wrote it down somewhere, I think it's the, there's another entity that monitors, kind of like the NCAA does. So Maine has their own entity for athletics. They're part of the lawsuit. And so the Department of Education for Maine is still responsible for that entity's governing policies. And the policy up until 2024 was still not allowing men or boys to self-identify to participate in female sports. Maine's governing body, that athletic association, they just changed that policy in May of 2024. Yeah. And that's part of the lawsuit, that previous to that, they acknowledged that men, there's physiological and biological differences between boys and girls. Boys are stronger and they're faster and they are just physiologically, biologically different. And it's harmful for girls to participate against a boy. And we see that. We saw that in the Olympics. You know, a couple of years ago, we see it in all the different sports with volleyball and boxing. Look at track and field, where they're just faster. The boys are faster and they'd be 300th ranking in the state if they had to actually run against other boys. In the meantime, they're taking the 1, 2, and 3 spots when they're participating against girls. So the Maine Department of Education will have to get the athletic association to now change that 2024 policy. And that's where there's some friction in Maine, because there are some school districts that want to comply with Title IX. They've came out and they've said they want to comply. But the problem is their school athletics are under that governing authority for the state in the athletics. And so it's that athletic association that's refusing to comply with Title IX.
And it's the Department of Justice's job is going to be to convince the judge there that that is a Title IX violation, and that because it's a violation, the education department and all the subsidiary schools have to lose federal funding. I don't know who the judge is, but I assume it's an uphill climb, or do you not think so?
No, it is it will be an uphill climb.
Yes. And they're in the First Circuit as well.
Correct.
Okay. And the First Circuit, the bench there has a few Biden appointees and maybe even previous appointees. So is really the end game getting this case to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes, that would be the end game. Yes.
Okay. Where SCOTUS would have to decide one way or another, once and for all, whether Title IX prohibits biological males and females.
And that's what I think everybody wants. That's what we want.
Because, well, maybe not SCOTUS. We don't know what SCOTUS wants.
Right. But that's true. But that's what we want.
So we do have a couple of questions rolling in. There is a Q&A box at the bottom of your screen if you have a question. I've got a couple more for Beth. So far, nothing's happened. We just have a complaint on the docket. No answer, no motions. Correct. It's very, very early on. Do we think that there's communication happening between Maine and the feds in order to resolve this, or do we think that it's going to go the distance?
Yeah. No, there is communication. From my understanding, there is communication happening. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to submit their, they're going to have to put in some pleadings. However, they understand that the administration is serious Like this is not like this is the long game. The administration is in for the long haul. They want Maine to comply because they see Maine as setting the precedent for those other blue states that want to challenge the president. And so they're doing all that they can to encourage Maine to comply because they will lose federal funding. And again, I think I already said it, this will be the first time this has ever happened. So we can't underestimate that. We can't understate that. This is a big deal.
Right. And so assuming there's also this education track, do you see the Department of Education going alongside the Department of Justice in court and going both directions, given how important it does appear to be to the administration, but they've let up on the USDA angle? Do you see them going, full steam ahead on both the Department of Education and the DOJ actions here?
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. And then if that happened, if Maine actually lost federal funding, that would be, you said, the first time that Title IX has ever been invoked to fully deprive a school recipient of federal funds. Is that right?
Correct. It would be the first time. And I can't imagine. Again, let's go back to this issue. We're talking about boys playing in women's sports. The polling at a minimum shows this is an 80-20 issue. There's polls out there that show it's a 90-10 issue. So when you have the majority of Americans who understand, now these are including Democrats and independents, when they understand that boys should not be participating in female sports, you would think that there would be some type of agreement that is reached with the state of Maine, because they are not serving their constituents they're depriving the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of young girls of their opportunities for a handful of boys who can still play. We are not, none of this is about telling somebody they can't have the same educational opportunity as their peers. They can. They are just having the same opportunity within the sex that they were born with.
Put yourself in Maine's shoes. I know that might be hard for a second, but I could see Maine saying, look, we're gonna suffer regulatory whiplash in this context because the Biden administration could have threatened to go the other direction. There's gonna be some future administration that says you have to put transgender or students who identify as transgender into the league that matches their gender identity. So we're just gonna keep flipping back and forth between different administrations. What is the response to that argument if Maine were to make it?
What is the government's response?
No, what is Maine? Well, yeah, what is the government's response to the idea that all we're doing is forcing these states to flip back and forth depending on who sits in the White House?
Yeah, well, that's something obviously that we always want these executive orders to be codified into law. That's part of what Independent Women's Forum, what we've been doing actually across the country. So sex-based definitions, part of that was our model, IW's model for sex-based legislation. That has been passed, and also sports legislation, keeping men out of women's sports, that has been passed now in 26 states. So we have 26 states that protect girls and females, and also have the sex-based legislation where they've defined men, women, and sex, and specifically that it doesn't include gender identity. Then you have the 24 blue states that don't. So our country is divided in half on that issue with respect to the legislation. And so personally, what we would have liked to see is it to have been passed federally. I mean, it passed the House, but then wasn't able to pass the Senate. But we still have three more years with President Trump in office. We have to get that passed because, again, that is what happens. On day one, Biden administration wanted to change the definition of sex within the federal government to include gender identity. And on day one, President Trump went back to the original intent. So again, just like you said, if Democrats take office in 3.5 years, these executive orders, of course, can be revoked and something else can be done. So we have to get these type of laws, and we have to get this codified into law.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned that this would be the first time that state is deprived of federal funds. That's partly why it seems kind of unbelievable that it would happen. You know, the punishment is so heavy that I think a lot of people are skeptical that this will really go the distance, or that SCOTUS will weigh in on the merits of this issue, which is obviously a very hot button issue. And you know, who knows whether they'll want to hear the case. Is it certain in your mind that the Supreme Court will, suppose that the First Circuit gives Maine a victory, well, is it certain in your mind that the Supreme Court will see that they have to weigh in, otherwise they'll create this flip-flop problem every 4 years?
I think that the Supreme Court has to weigh in on it. I mean, can I say certain? I don't know any of us can say certain, but they have to. I mean, again, look at the potential implications of this. I mean, losing federal funding for all of your schools. I mean, this is huge. So nobody wants that to happen. I believe this is something that is ripe for them to have that they have to be able to give a ruling on. But I also think that Maine, they have to come to the table with the DOJ. So they do have to be able to come to the table. And I can't see them putting all of their students and all of their schools at risk for an ideology.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you have a couple of questions in the queue? Do feel free to drop your question in. The first is an anonymous comment, and you might have to put your political commentator hat on for this one, but all those in favor of women's rights should support Trump, President Trump, on this. Is this a political winner for the department, and is that going to give the Department of Justice the steam that they need to carry this through to the finish line? You know, you can imagine when it's school lunches that they maybe don't have the same motivation behind them, but it sounds like no matter what sob story Maine tells, the administration is going to not worry about that given the political dynamics. What's your response to that?
Right. Well, I mean, I look at this as, and maybe it's because this is what I do day in and day out. You know, we do whatever we can to protect women's spaces and women's sports. Because if you don't, as soon as you open the door and allow men into our spaces, what does that do? That actually erases women. And that throws Title IX on its head. It basically, Title IX then means nothing. So I think that we've come so far in the last 50 years that, you know, I look at this complaint, I think it's a loser for the state of Maine. I don't think they can win it. I think Title IX is very specific. And then it's just very specific. And, you know, you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. And then there's the additional regulations when it comes to athletics within Title IX. And women are legally able, and it's not considered discrimination, to have single sex teams. And when you have a single sex team, that means women, you are biologically a female to participate in a single sex sport. So I don't think they can win it personally. So will it be a political win for the administration? Absolutely. Because, you know, this is, again, and I keep saying this, this is an 80-20 issue. The majority of Americans agree with this, that women should have their own spaces and private spaces. You know, look what happened. We have ambassadors that have worked for independent, that are our ambassadors with Independent Women. And you've all heard the stories of, you know, a Riley Gaines and a Paula Scanlon swimming against Leah Thomas, and they would have to change 18 times a week in the same dress, in the same locker room. This is unbelievable that this has been allowed to happen here in the United States, and we need to protect our girls, period. And I think Title IX does that. And I think that, you know, Maine can't win this.
Next question is about Bostock. So there's a Supreme Court case from 2020 saying that an employer who fires or disciplines an employee based on the fact that they were born a male but identify as a female, or vice versa, is a violation of Title VII, which prohibits sex discrimination in employment. Will Maine be able to invoke Bostock in the context of allowing biological men to participate in women's athletics, saying where our hands are tied, we have this Supreme Court case. And what is their response to that?
Well, it doesn't apply. But it doesn't apply. That applies in the context, like you just said, Will, of Title VII, between employment discrimination. We are talking about minors. You know, we're talking about children. We're talking about federally funded educational programs and athletic programs in K through 12 schools and in colleges. So it doesn't apply.
Yeah. Susanna Prucka mentions the Maine Principals Association, which may be the...
That's it. That was the athletic. Oh, thank you for saying it, because it was a weird... They're calling it a Principals Association as an athletic association. So that's... She's correct. Thank you.
And remind us what the context of that group is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the governing body for all the athletics in the state of Maine.
So even if a school said, we want to abide by the executive order,
and they have.
Yeah, the MPA would say, you can't do that. State law prevents you from doing that.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Well, right. It's their policy. It's their policy that was changed in 2024. So up until 2024, if you read the MPA's policy, it acknowledged that females should have their private spaces and their private sports. And that if there was a transgender boy who wanted to play on a female sports team, they had to go through this entire process, because they were acknowledging that the primary concern is the safety of the girl. So that was part of the policy of the NPA up until May of 2024. So Maine just changed that.
Yeah. Next question is from John Scheller asking, could one case resolve this issue nationally? So suppose the First Circuit ruled in favor of President Trump. Would that end the issue, or do we have to go circuit by circuit if the Supreme Court doesn't get involved?
Yeah. If the Supreme Court doesn't go involved, and you know this as well as I do, Will, do we have cases where we have, you know, split circuits? Yes, it does happen. But the hope is, and I did speak with somebody in the administration last night, the hope is that Maine is basically the precedent, that they're serving as the example, that if the other states aren't coming into compliance and are still allowing boys to play in girls' sports, that the administration will sue them. You know, well, they will investigate first. I mean, they will take the appropriate steps. They will investigate, and then they will institute lawsuits. They're not afraid to do that. So the hope is that this case is going to be the example and that the others will follow suit.
Yeah. Next comment is from Karen Boudreau, who says, don't assume that every citizen of Maine thinks like Janet Mills. The state's very much divided over this. If Maine loses federal funding, it'll be devastating to a huge part of the state. So is that going to be an added reason why Maine may ultimately roll over and decide to play ball with the administration?
Right. Well, that's the reason, you know, that's the reason. And that's obviously the hope.
Yeah. Next question is from an anonymous questioner. Is Title IX a two-way street? And by that, they mean, are biological women allowed to compete in boys and men's sports if they want to? And would that cause psychological harm? You know, I assume that's probably not an issue very, very often, because there aren't that many girls who want to compete in boys' sports. But I suppose the Maine's logic would say, yes, we would allow that.
Right. Maine's logic would say yes. The rest of the country, I do have to say that in these sports bills that IW has helped, we've helped draft them for the various states. And like I had mentioned, 26 states have passed a legislation to protect women's sports. And there are some states that I will just throw this out there, that if there's a sport that is not offered to the other sex, and it's a non-contact sport, they would allow that. But we at Independent Women, we don't really have any examples of that, because you don't have very many girls who want to play football.
Right. Well, I mean, if Maine were saying, look, we have to have this policy because otherwise a student who identifies as male, and then sorry, who was born male and then identifies as female would have nowhere to compete because they can't compete with the boys. Maybe they're on estrogen or something. And so there, you'd have to have a separate transgender league. Have you heard that argument? And then is there a response to that?
Yeah, no, we've heard that argument. And there are states, state legislatures that have actually discussed that. But the reality is there really isn't enough that they'd even be able to field teams. And again, it's not, you are not depriving somebody who identifies as the opposite sex. You're not depriving them of any athletic opportunity or educational opportunity. You know, you're born male, you can participate in the male league or the co-ed league. Most schools have club teams where they're co-ed. That happens all across the country, and we've seen that. So it's these particular situations where, you know, you have girls that have worked their whole life, and these are athletes who are trying to get college scholarships. It's these girls who are losing out on the opportunities that are being stolen by the boys. And, you know, it's just, again, it's not only you're losing scholarships and opportunities and roster spots and trophies, but it is harmful to young girls. It's harmful. It's a safety issue. I'm Peyton McNabb. I don't know if the listeners have heard of her name. She's an ambassador that is an ambassador, a sports ambassador for independent women. She was the young lady who was hit in the volleyball by a male on the opposing team. Estimates have said that when they've watched that clip, that the volleyball went to her head at 70 miles an hour. She is permanently damaged. She's permanently damaged because of that blow to the head, which could have been prevented by not allowing males. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. Again, biologically and physiologically different than women, and they should not be playing against women.
Yeah. The questions are rolling in, so do for the crowd out there, do feel free to submit them. Okay, the next question is from Eric Bram. Won't the federal courts decide what the law means ultimately, and that will prevent the flip-flopping on the executive orders going back and forth? And is that a reason why SCOTUS will decide, okay, well, I guess we have to roll up our sleeves and decide this issue without letting it percolate for endless years?
I agree with that. And I also agree that if there would be a circuit split, you know, if there's another state that gets sued and we have to go that route, that would be another reason for SCOTUS to take the case.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, the First Circuit, I think people think of as probably not so sympathetic to the administration.
They won't be.
If they ended up ruling in favor of the Department of Justice, that would send a message to states and other circuits that even the unsympathetic circuit let the administration strip federal funds from Maine. Next question is from David Tryon. What is going on with the Department of Education's track? Just the fact that the USDA has probably stopped. Does that end anything with the Department of Education? I'm fairly sure that's ongoing and that is a separate process that could involve an administrative hearing with an ALJ and theoretically even a second action. But thoughts on whether the Department of Education is going to keep pressing as long as the DOJ is in court?
I think they will. What I've heard from the White House is the focus right now is on this lawsuit. So this is the focus. They believe that this is the long game, and this is the way for the administration to be able to achieve getting Maine to comply. So that's really, they believe the way that Maine is going to comply is through this lawsuit.
And just to be clear, Maine has not filed a separate suit against the administration other than the USDA suit.
The USDA suit, which on Friday, on May 2nd, when they came to an agreement, then Maine withdrew the lawsuit on May 2nd.
Got it.
Against the USDA.
Okay. We've got a commenter who wants to fight back a little bit on Bostock and say that the employment context is not so different than the sports context. Let me try to charitably characterize the argument here. So in Bostock, the court said that gender identity, if you're born male and you identify as female, and you treat that person worse than someone who is born male and identifies as male, then you are engaging in sex discrimination, because if you flipped the sex, you wouldn't do the thing that you are doing that's adverse to them. So in that thought experiment, it's a little bit easier to conceptualize because there's a termination involved. You're firing somebody because they are transgender. Do you think that holds any water when you're already segregating by males and females, and the mandate from above is to give everyone equal access based on sex?
But so you have to understand that if we read Title IX, and I have it somewhere right here, if I could read it, that you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. And sex under Title IX means male and female. So yeah. I don't believe that. And I think this is another interesting point that, I mean, I don't agree with Bostock. I just don't personally. But another interesting point is that case that was heard on December 4th, the U.S. v. Scrimeti case. And I believe we should be getting a decision from SCOTUS in June. And it was a long oral argument, like 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And if you read that transcript, there was an interesting exchange where I believe it was Justice Kavanaugh had said, and the ACLU attorney had to concede, that is gender identity a protected class? You know, protected class to get, you know, protection is, you know, sex is a protected class. Gender identity is not, because to be a protected class, it has to be immutable.
Yeah.
And non-changing. But gender identity is subjective and it's changing all the time. You know, a few months ago, there were 50 different gender identities. Now there's 72. So you can identify as anything that you want to identify at. It's not an immutable class. It's not going to be a protected class. And again, I just have to, we have to understand that we are talking in the context of education, and in education receiving the federal funding, it's Title IX is controlling.
Yeah.
And not Bostock.
Next question is from Kevin Green. Interesting question about private use of gender identity. So the YMCA, which is not Maine, obviously, allows individuals who identify as transgender, suppose someone who's born male says, I identify now as a female, to use the bathroom of their gender identity instead of their sex. Do you see this case interacting at all with private entities that have that policy? And could you envision a decision that says there is something wrong or unlawful about using gender identity to segregate as opposed to sex for other reasons, even in the private context?
Yeah. So personally, I would love for that to happen, but legally, I think that there's not a really legal avenue right now. I've actually talked with some attorneys over at ADF for certain cases that we wanted to bring with IW, with our law department. So you have private organizations, and it's going to be hard to, you're not going to be able to hold them to that same standard right now with the entities that are receiving the federal funding. It's two different things. It's difficult to get around to be able to hold private organizations accountable. In particular, with cases that we've talked about bringing and we've lost, and the ones we have brought is sororities, because they're private entities, and you have sororities, you have females that want to keep sororities female, but there's a lot of sororities around the country that are allowing men who self-identify as females to join their sorority. And it's very difficult. Well, we haven't been able to win one of those lawsuits. And I know ADF has encountered the same type of things when you're trying to win these lawsuits against private entities. And it's, if any of you lawyers can find a way, let us know, because we'd like to.
But you do think that Scrimeti might have an impact on the main case?
I do. I mean, I think Scrimeti is going to have an impact on cases all across the country because, we don't have that much longer to wait. But I think a lot of people are hoping that we get a good decision from SCOTUS. And I think it's going to clear up a lot of things.
Next question is more of a comment from an anonymous individual, more of a political commentator comment as well. Can you rely on an 80-20 issue in order to obtain a favorable result? And they cite the example of a Burgerfell kind of being a counter to what was generally perceived in the early 2000s or before that. So is there a danger that the public perception and the willingness of the Supreme Court to take this case could go down in your mind? Or do you think this is an enduring opinion, more enduring than what we had with same-sex marriage?
Yeah, I think that because that this is an 80-20 issue or more, and I think that this is this issue with allowing males to invade not only female sports, but it runs the gambit. We're talking shower rooms, locker rooms, domestic violence shelters, rape crisis centers, prisons. This is happening in so many different areas that the Supreme Court has got to weigh in on it. They've got to weigh in on what exactly does federal law state as a man and as a woman. They have to be able to weigh in on it because, again, going back to sex is immutable, gender identity is not. We cannot be protecting. Gender identity is not a protected class. And so I think that they have to be able to weigh in on that because it's not just schools and sports. There's, like I said, there's a lot of other areas that the invasion of men. And again, I guess what we have to stress is it's not only, we're not talking about men who have actually maybe done cross-sex hormones and, puberty blockers and surgeries. We're talking just identifying. So you're just identifying as the opposite sex. So you don't have to have taken any type of medical procedure. And so it's really harmful to women.
Next question, another anonymous one. Do you expect the Department of Justice to rely on the United Kingdom's recent, I don't know if it's the Supreme Court or whatever their high court is called, decision deciding, I think, the issue that one of their anti-discrimination statutes only covers biological males and biological females?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think that what they do in Europe is... I don't think that it's really indicative. I don't think it's going to influence our decision, but they're aware of it. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, just talk about the gender, just the gender dysphoria and the gender affirming, I hate to use that word, care for minors. Europe, they were the first to do all of these surgeries and procedures, and now they have stepped back in most of those European countries. So we've taken note. I mean, I think we have to take note and what they've learned. So, possibly it should.
Yeah. Next is from John Scheller. How could this get to SCOTUS's emergency docket instead of waiting for the entire series of litigation to play out at the district court and the First Circuit? It's interesting because usually it's the administration acting first by depriving the funds, and then the suit would be by Maine here, right? And then you might get an injunction, and then you'd take that up to the Supreme Court. Here, do you see any way of getting, suppose the district court moves or grants summary judgment to Maine or grants a motion to dismiss, is there a way of getting up to SCOTUS really, really quickly, just to make sure that the executive order, the action is there before the end of the administration?
Yeah, I'm not sure in that scenario. I see it more, in the flip side, right? I mean, I would think that if federal funding was withheld, that on the flip side, that can get up to SCOTUS more on an emergency basis because you have millions of dollars being withheld from school districts in an entire state. So I would see it more on the flip side.
Yeah. Next is from Jeffrey Wood. Does this case implicate broader debates about the Impoundment Act and some of the tensions on federal funding? So we've definitely seen a few of these cases in the early stages where the administration has said, because you're using federal dollars for DEI or improper purposes, or you haven't accounted for it appropriately, we're going to cut you off. And there have been challenges to that, saying, well, once Congress allocates money, you can't just have the federal government not dole it out. Do you think this case implicates those debates at all? And obviously, you don't have to know one way or another, but what is your gut?
I don't see that. I understand what you're saying. There have been a lot of cases, and then they go to a district court judge, and now all of a sudden we have these injunctions, and everything is stayed, and there's all these issues now with nationwide injunctions. But this is specific. This is Title IX. Title IX says you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, period. And I think that for the most part, people and politicians and lawyers and the government of I think they get that. They understand it. I believe that's why they really have to come to the table and do something on behalf of the citizens of Maine. They can't let this suit continue. I think that there may be some settlement in the works. However, Title IX is specific. And so I don't think it's, you know, I guess that's hopefully that answers it. I mean, I just look at it as this is just a specific issue that has to do with schools and the federal funding for schools.
Yeah. Next question is from Kevin Rouse. It's also about private organizations. Could they lose tax exempt status if they opted to use gender identity as the divider for locker rooms? Sororities are not tax exempt, to my knowledge. Kevin doesn't ask about, but this came up in the last couple of years. A couple of district courts have held that a private school is subject to Title IX because nonprofit status is federal funding. So those cases have been appealed, and I'm not sure what the status of them is now. But I suppose if Title IX applies to every nonprofit school, even private schools that don't actually receive dollars, that a ruling from SCOTUS that addressed this transgender debate could apply to them too.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, most people have said those district court rulings are out to lunch and they shouldn't, hold. But it's interesting that the flip side here would be the case. Okay. And so is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of Maine or the risk to federal funding or what IWF is doing to support the litigation from afar or follow it?
Yeah. So we are, again, this is an issue that we brought to the forefront several years ago with men invading women's private spaces in sports. So that's our top priority. We've done what we could really in the states where we've helped get 26, laws enacted in 26 states. And yes, we're watching from afar, but we're also, in particular, have contact with people who we need to within the administration when we know that this is happening in other states. So right now, we're seeing what happens with Maine to hopefully put an end to what's going on in Washington and Illinois, Minnesota. What are some other New Mexico? That just probably not yet in the media, but we had gotten some intel, so to speak, within the last couple of weeks that we're investigating. We put out some FOIA requests. So we are definitely still on top of this issue. We believe strongly in the protection of women and not to erase women. And by allowing men into our sports and spaces, that's what it does. And so at IW, we're here to make sure that women don't get erased, and especially Title IX protections continue to protect women. I'm old enough to know and remember when Title IX, unfortunately, was enacted back in 1972. And I have been a recipient of that. I played sports all through school and high school and college, even law school. I'm at club level at the law school, but and of course my girls were, and now I have granddaughters. So I will be fighting for this issue probably till I take my last breath.
Well, thank you for ending on that note. I'm going to turn it back over to Marco, but before I do that, I want to thank all of the attendees and a very feisty audience. I'm glad we got so many questions and filled up the time. Thank you so much, Beth, for being here, talking about your role at Independent Women's Forum, and then all the work that you're doing, and of course, the case that the Department of Justice has filed in Maine. With that, let's turn it over to Marco to close this out.
And I want to second that. Thank you both for that fantastic discussion and the benefit of your time and expertise today. I would also like to thank you, our audience, for joining us. We greatly appreciate your participation. For information on more upcoming events, please visit our website or all major social media platforms at FedSoc. On that note, we are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the Practice Groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.